Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Free Association. I've got one video to play this evening, and it's John Campbell, who's a medical lecturer. He was lecturing on nursing training courses. He's been doing that for years. His credentials are online. He's got a channel on YouTube, and he's a health analyst. So I've seen him interviewed on American TV, and he gets interviewed on the BBC now and again. And he's quite conservative in his approach, but I watched him for over a year, and he gets frustrated when he can't see the logic of what's happening. So he does ask good questions, and he does see inconsistencies and contradictions, and he's quite prepared to comment on them. So I like him, even though he's advocating vaccines and he's very conservative in lots of ways. He does ask good questions, and that's the key thing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's been medically trained for years. He's in the system, basically, so he's not going to see things that people see from outside of the system. He's seeing what the system tells him to see, but he's asking questions. And when he gets an answer that he doesn't understand or is contradictory or has inconsistencies in it, he challenges it. He interviewed Tess Laurie about 6 months ago when the ivermectin story first really broke, when her meta-analysis was starting to be discussed. And I saw two interviews with Tess Laurie on his channel, and they went in depth with a lot of things. She went through the whole analysis, explained what she'd done, why she'd done it, and all the rest of it. It's a very detailed analysis. So anyway, I'm going to play this. He's talking about prescribing of ivermectin in Australia. It's about 18 minutes, this video, so it's about the right length for this type of show. I'm trying to keep everything to about 20 minutes or half an hour. So let's go with this for the next 20 minutes. And I don't really need to say anything because you can hear his frustration. And here he is, Dr. John Campbell.
The ask question. I didn't particularly alien government sites on ivermectin, so let's look at that now and see what the Australians are saying. But if you're short of time for this video, I will give you a bit of a bottom line on it, because there is a bit of detail to go through. The main arguments here put forward by the Australian Department of Health against ivermectin seems to be, firstly, that it discourages people from getting vaccinated, and if people think they're covered with ivermectin, they could be a transmission risk. So that's one, it discourages people from getting vaccinated. The second one is that some social media accounts have been getting the dose wrong. We'll pad that one out in a minute. And the third reason is that they're running out of stock for other vital reasons. Now, let's just say for now, all of those reasons given by the Australian government are open to critique. So we'll do that now. Now, this is the site here. If you want to look at it for yourself, just to make sure I'm not making anything up, the whole report is there. Not too extensive and very accessible, very easy to read, quite comprehensible, nothing difficult about it. Now, this is so from the Australian government, Department of Health, Therapeutic Goods Administration, TGA, new restrictions on prescribing ivermectin for COVID-19. These are new restrictions. Came out on the 10th of September, so about 6 days ago now. So Therapeutic Goods Administration, acting on the advice of the Advisory Committee for Medicines Scheduling. So this seems to have gone through the appropriate channels in Australia. Placed new restrictions on the prescribing of oral ivermectin. General practitioners are now only able to prescribe ivermectin for TGA-approved conditions, scabies and certain parasitic infections. Now, let me clarify what's been happening here general practitioners in Australia have been prescribing ivermectin, and now the Therapeutic Goods Administration is telling general practitioners, these are qualified doctors in Australia, that they can't prescribe it for the viral indications, is what they are saying. They can only give it for specific indications, which are scabies and certain parasitic infections. Certain specialists will be able to still prescribe the drug if they think it's appropriate for a particular patient. And I would have been surprised if the GPs in Australia had been prescribing it to patients who they didn't think it was appropriate for, but this is what the Australian authorities are saying. Ivermectin is not approved for COVID-19 use in Australia, of course. We know this. That is the case. And yet some doctors were prescribing it. They say it's currently strongly discouraged by the National COVID Clinical Evidence Task Force, fair enough, the World Health Organization, yes, and the US Food and Drug Administration, yes. They seem to forget to mention that the National Institutes of Health in the United States puts an open question on ivermectin. There's insufficient evidence for the COVID-19 treatment guidelines panel to recommend either for or against the use of ivermectin in the treatment of COVID-19. So that is from the NIH in the United States. But as I say, that wasn't mentioned in the Australia report. Now, getting on to their reasons, and this is where it gets really quite interesting. I might be revealing something quite fundamental, actually, but I'll let you decide that when we look at it. First reason. So there's a number of significant public health risks associated with taking ivermectin in an attempt to prevent COVID-19 infection rather than getting vaccinated. Well, we're not talking about vaccines here. We're talking about ivermectin. Now, I strongly advocate vaccination, of course, because I believe in preventing disease. But I also believe if treatments are available for disease, we should treat it. Prevention is better than cure, of course. So vaccination is important. But why they seem to be conflating the issue of ivermectin as a prophylaxis with vaccine as a prophylaxis is not really quite explained on their documentation. Ivermectin, in an attempt to prevent people infecting infection rather than getting vaccinated. So I would certainly say get vaccinated as well. I don't quite see where they're coming from there, unless they're suggesting that people will be taking ivermectin instead of getting vaccinated, which I would go against the advice of every doctor in Australia that I would imagine every single general practitioner in Australia would be advising vaccination. It would just be bizarre if they weren't. If your general practitioner in Australia is not advising you to be vaccinated, do let me know. I would be astounded if there's any general practitioners in Australia that are not recommending vaccination. So quite why those two should be mutually exclusive, I don't really quite see. Individuals who believe that they are protected from infection by taking ivermectin may choose not to get tested or to seek medical care if they experience symptoms. Well, again, if this ivermectin has been prescribed by the doctor, presumably the doctor could say, look, if you get symptoms, still come and see me. You know, I'm your doctor. I want to see you if you get sick. You would imagine they could say that. Doing so has the potential to spread the risk of COVID-19 infection throughout the community. So what they're saying here is, well, people that are taking ivermectin probably won't want to get vaccinated. People who believe they are protected from infection by taking ivermectin may choose not to get tested or to seek medical advice. Well, they could be, or not to get, if they get symptoms. Well, I would have thought symptomatic people would, but if they were vaccinated as well, their risk would presumably be the same or less of anyone else. So is this getting to the heart of the matter? So what the Australian authorities seem to be saying here, not that ivermectin's good or bad or indifferent or dangerous or lethal or brilliant, they seem to be saying any of that. Well, what's going to stop people getting vaccinated? And if people are taking ivermectin and they think it's going to protect them against infection, then if they get symptoms, they might just go on spreading the disease. So is this the heart of the issue? Is ivermectin being poo-pooed around the world because people think it will discourage people from being vaccinated? I don't know. I'm just reporting what they have said pretty directly, actually, from this Australian site. There it is. Read it for yourself. That's what the Australian authorities are saying. I simply report what they say. So that's their first reason. Secondly, the dose of ivermectin that are being advocated for use in unreliable social media posts and other sources of COVID-19 and other sources for COVID-19 are significantly higher than those approved and found to be safe for scabies or parasitic treatment. So the second reason they're saying that they don't want their doctors to prescribe ivermectin is that they are unreliable social media posts which get the dose wrong. Now, this is rather strange. Now, in Australia, I believe they have something called the Australian Medicines Handbook. Now, I don't subscribe to this, so I couldn't actually get a copy of it. But when you go into a drug, imagine you're looking for a drug, say I take atorvastatin. So it says atorvastatin, good for lowering cholesterol. For dose, please see a convenient social media poster. I suspect it doesn't say that. I suspect it says 20 milligrams or whatever the appropriate dose is. And for sure, I've actually looked at this this document here from Australia. And this says quite a lot about ivermectin. It's the official Australian site, as far as I can gather. Starts off with a description. Ivermectin is derived from the avermectin, a class of highly active broad-spectrum antiparasitic agents, isolated from fermentation broths of Streptomyces avermitalis. So that's the bug that they brew it up with. So, and this does go on, of course, and give the precise dose. It gives a lot of information about it, and it does give the precise dose. Nowhere on this document does it say refer to unreliable social media posts to determine the dose that doctors want to prescribe to their patients. I mean, this is just weird that it says this, positively weird. So because some unreliable social media posts are getting the dose wrong, there's a problem. And these higher doses can be associated with serious adverse effects. Well, of course, yes. Serious adverse effects including severe nausea if you give too much, vomiting if you give too much, dizziness if you give too much, neurological effects such as dizziness, seizure, and coma. Of course, it's a dangerous drug in overdose, of course. Now, in the UK, we have this thing called the British National Formulary, which we have here. This is from the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, and that gives us the dose of the drug in quite precise terms for various indications. So for chronic strongyloides infection, 200 micrograms per kilogram for daily two doses. Now for ivermectin, to be fair, you might need to give it a bit longer than that, but the doses are here. So, and this is absolutely standard in pharmacology. So it's 200 micrograms per kilogram, which is 0.2 milligrams. So if I weigh 80 kilograms, I wish I weighed a little bit more. But so if I weigh 80 kilograms, then it's 0.2 milligrams times 80, which I think works out at about, work it out for yourself, it's about 16 milligrams, I think. These things are so well known. I mean, when I was 19 years old, I had to do a drug round as part of my assessments to be a registered nurse. And the charge nurse who was doing the assessment came in and he said, what are the prerequisites of giving drugs? And you had to say the right dose of the right drug to the right patient via the right route at the right time. If you didn't get those five rights, you failed. You didn't do the assessment. Of course, everyone memorised those. These are chiselled into the brains of all nurses and doctors. You've got to give the right dose. And yet here in Australia, they're saying that because social media gets it wrong, doctors are not allowed to prescribe. General practitioners, doctors are not allowed to get it wrong because some people are not allowed to prescribe the drug because some people get it wrong on social media. This is positively weird. You know, there's a joke that pharmacy is poison in small doses, and it's basically true. You give too much of anything, it's going to be poisonous. So can overdoses of other drugs be a problem? Well, just to give you one example here, in A&E, you spend, I wouldn't say half your life, but maybe 5% of your life treating paracetamol overdoses. Can other drugs be a problem? Well, this is in British Medical Journal. Direct quote, untreated paracetamol poisoning may cause varying degrees of liver injury over the 2 to 4 days following ingestion, including fulminant hepatic failure, which basically means you get liver failure. If you don't get a liver transplant, you die. this is a common drug called paracetamol, acetaminophen, Tylenol, depending on where you live, it's all the same molecule. So what they're not saying on this Australian site is, well, look, there's a drug here called paracetamol or another one called ibuprofen. If you've got a viral infection, it might give you a fever. If you take paracetamol or ibuprofen, that might bring the fever down, making you think you're better. I mean, it doesn't come into it. It's, you know, we know that we have to give the right dose of the drug, and yet because it's mentioned on social media, doctors in Australia apparently are so stupid that they can't tell the difference between official guidelines and unreliable social media posts. No offence to doctors in Australia, but that seems to be what is being implicated. And of course, that's nonsense. Of course, doctors know all about dosing drugs. That is what they do day in, day out. Third reason, final reason, there's been a 3-4-fold increase in 3-4-fold increase dispensing of ivermectin prescriptions in recent months, leading to a national local shortage for those who need the medicine for scabies and parasitic infections. So Australia's running out of ivermectin, it would appear. It believes that this is due to recent prescribing and dispensing for unapproved uses such as COVID-19. Okay, so that's why they think it is. Such shortages can disproportionately impact vulnerable people, including those in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island communities. Okay. Right, so it looks like the Australian government can't procure enough ivermectin. In India, they make this stuff by the thousands of kilograms. Thousands of kilograms. It is readily available everywhere. And if the Australian government can't work out how to buy a few ivermectin tablets, I'm a bit concerned for everyone in Australia if you can't work that out, Australian government. This is just nonsense. The idea that the Australian government cannot procure enough ivermectin to treat some parasitic infections is such, to my mind, utter nonsense. Why do they even say this? It's such a shallow thing to say. There's only one TGA approved oral ivermectin, that particular product there, 3 milligram blister pack, indicated for the treatment of river blindness, onchopsoriasis. Yes, so this is good. So this Australian website is telling us that it's used for the treatment of this horrible condition, onchopsoriasis. Here's the World Health Organization note on that here. Onchopsoriasis. River blindness. More than 99% of infected people live in 31 African countries. The disease also exists in some foci in Latin America and Yemen. Oh, it doesn't actually mention that you get it in Australia. And just to clarify the issue, they give us a map. So here's where this disease occurs, and as we see, in Australia there isn't any. So why does the Australian website mention that? I really don't. No, because there isn't any in Australia. Strange. Having said that, threadworms, intestinal strongyloidiasis, is fairly common in rural Aboriginal and Torres Strait communities, as is scabies, both of which, of course, have excellent alternative treatments. I tend to use a Bendazole for strongyloides as a first line treatment, but anyway, you can't argue with it, it is an indication. But I suspect if the Australian government wanted to order 1 million tablets from India, they could get them pretty quickly. I suspect if they wanted to order 1 billion tablets, they could get them pretty quickly. But hey, they're saying they're running out. All medical practitioners continue to prescribe oral ivermectin for the approved indications. And then they say, however, the prescribing of oral ivermectin for indications not approved is now limited to certain specialists. Presumably they're talking about senior hospital consultants. So there you go. That is the question frequently asked about ivermectin in Australia. So the reasons that ivermectin is not being prescribed in Australia is, firstly, it will stop people getting the vaccine. Secondly, social media posts get the dose wrong. Therefore, doctors can't prescribe it. Thirdly, they're running out of stock. I mean, this is really, that is pathetic, Australian government. Now, what I'm looking forward to for the Australian government is, what's the efficacy? What are the contraindications? Are there contraindications? What are the interactions? Because we know that this drug can interact with a couple of blood thinning, anticoagulant agents and another antiparasitic agent. what's the evidence that it works? What's the evidence that it doesn't work? But not stuff like this. This is this really adds nothing to the debate and tells me nothing about your view, Australian authorities, of the efficacy of ivermectin or the dangers of ivermectin as a drug in its own right. So there you go. Look at it for yourself, really. Look at it for yourself. I mean, I've said as much as I can, really. That's it. That's what they say. So there you go. That's from the Australian Government Department of Health Therapeutic Goods Administration. So not a lot further forward, really, but if you have stayed to watch this video nonetheless, thank you for watching.
There you are. That was John Campbell, who's a health analyst in the UK. He's based in Carlisle in the northwest of England, which isn't too far away from me. I might at some point see if I can get him on here and have a chat with him.
Welcome to this talk. Well, this is going to be a pre-say of the rather long... And this is my term of time. I'm going to remove the main point now. So here with Dr. Laurie. She's a medical doctor. She's a doctor of philosophy, a research specialist, and understands research remarkably well. Now, the first video we did was on the importance of evidence-based practice and the way that she synthesizes evidence. So we talked about that for quite a while. Watch the video if you want to see it. In the second video, of course, we focused on ivermectin. Now, she heard about the publicity around ivermectin around Christmas and New Year time. And because she's got expertise in this field, she decided to have a look at it. She didn't get paid for it. The information she looked at came from the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance. And she heard the Senate, was the American Senate hearing with Dr. Perry Corey. That aroused her interest. She's got a background and expertise for analysis and synthesizing lots of different information. So she takes different studies, puts it all together, and comes out with a bigger picture to derive that which is most likely to be correct. We did stress on the video, as I always stress, never take any medication as a result of what I say or anyone on my video says. Only take things if your own doctor tells you to take them. This is for educational purposes only. Right, so Dr. Laurie was impressed with the body of evidence from the Frontline Critical Care COVID Alliance. Now, we talked about plausible mechanisms of action for ivermectin, and there are several plausible mechanisms of action. So, for example, if we're talking about a homeopathic treatment, there's no plausible mechanism of action. It can't work. It's that simple. So is there a plausible mechanism of action whereby ivermectin could be antiviral, whereby ivermectin could be anti-inflammatory? Yes, on both counts was her answers. So several plausible mechanisms for ivermectin action. Antiviral and anti-inflammatory effects. Prevents the life cycle of the virus and prevents viral replication. There is evidence for that. And reduces inflammatory markers. In other words, the way that the body reacts to inflammation. There seems to be less inflammation when people take ivermectin. We don't quite know whether that's reducing the amount of viruses, so there's less virus around to reduce the inflammation, or whether it's a direct anti-inflammatory. Probably a bit of both, potentially. But I'm not sure about that. Some studies show ivermectin reduces viral load. So this is from Dr. Laurie again. Studies show possible action against yellow fever, dengue, Zika, and others. Now, these are the most appalling viral infections. You might remember Zika caused these terrible poor children with small heads, microcephaly, a few years ago. Yellow fever, dengue fever, massive problem, huge problem. Loads of people get dengue in Cambodia, for example, where I was working. They're so, so sick. So could this work against other viral infections? Potentially, studies are needed to address that, but potentially, yes. And she did say potentially working against DNA and RNA, ribonucleic acid viruses like SARS coronavirus 2. So she wants more studies to explore the effects on other viral illness, which makes perfect sense. Now, practical empirical evidence for ivermectin working against SARS coronavirus 2, COVID-19. Preventing deaths and preventing infections, both possible. Now, she did a study including randomized controlled trials and the better quality observational studies. And she came out with 83% reduction in death rates. Now, if you watch the video, you'll see all this. She has specialized software where she puts all this information on from all the different trials, and the software works out what the overall effect is. This is basically like re-crunching the data. You take all the data from all these trials, you put it into this meta-analysis software, and it reanalyzes essentially all the data from all of the trials. So instead of having 10 little trials, it's a bit like having one big trial. Not quite as simple as that, but basically it's like that. And you collect all the data from around the world, which is what she specializes in, synthesize that into an answer. And that's what she got, 83% reduction in deaths. Wow, staggering, fall off your chair kind of number. 83% reduction in deaths. She appraised each study for the risk of bias. It's very clever. She talked directly to a lot of the authors. So Review Manager software, this would be a capital M. So Review Manager software was what she was using. This is used by the Cochrane people, and then that's one of the standard sort of evidence-based sites in the world, really. Well, in the world, yes. So pooled study data, puts it all together, reanalyzes the data, took statistical help where it's necessary, got this result, 83% reduction in deaths, submitted it to Matt Hancock's office on the 4th of January, and received no response. Strange. This is Dr. Tess Lois submitting this from, and you know, this, she's a leading expert, and yet, anyway, she's going through the publication process now. She did point out that in pandemics we're in emergency situations, and doctors are obligated to act quickly. And she did, but alas, not acted on, as far as we know, in the UK. Researchers have a moral duty to relay information as soon as possible, so that's why they did a preprint site, and that's why she relayed that. And she also made a video, but again, no political action in the UK from this. One has to wonder why there has been no... Or is there? We don't know. She didn't get a reply. Now, so that was 83% with... randomized controlled trials from around the world and good quality observational data. So many will say observational data poo-poo. I understand that. It's not that simple. She's an expert in this, and she did analyze all of the studies before she included them to get 83% protection against death. But even taking only randomized controlled trials, starting from scratch with a new review team of experts, peers to her, such as herself, great experts, 68% fewer deaths. So that's a much more conservative number. The real number could well be higher, but that's what she got when she only did a meta-analysis, crunching the data from the randomized controlled trials only. And she did stress she was using very strict criteria. So she was judging these studies really quite harshly, and yet still got 68%. Efficacy against death. Had she been judging the studies less harshly, of course that efficacy against death would have been higher. Impressive numbers. The software does what you call a forest plot. So this is risk ratio. So if the result's over here, it favours the action of ivermectin. If the plot's over here, it favours the actin. The control is better. And without going through this in detail, we see that that one's probably there, that one's probably there. If it's bang on the line, it means not the control or the placebo is better. If it's here, it means the placebo are better. If it's here, it means the ivermectin is better. That one was there. And of course, these lines are the uncertainties associated with the studies. If it's that one seems to be there, that one there, that one there, that one there. That one's got that range there. That one showed the placebo was better. That one's got a range there, but the middle was on the ivermectin side, and that one there. So we can see that the vast majority of these. So if you just looked at that study, you'd say, less people are dying in the control group than in the ivermectin group. Therefore, it doesn't work. But what this is such a clever thing. She looks at all of these studies, and the software computes the data from all of these studies and still got 68% fewer deaths in the group treated with ivermectin as opposed to the group given a placebo. And apparently this software, I'm going to download it and play with it as soon as I get the time. It's certainly still available. We're not sure whether you have to pay for it or not. So that was plotting deaths in treatment group and deaths in placebo group. Impressive results. Now, out of 100 deaths, ivermectin group, there was 27 deaths out of 1,000 people that were studied, and it was exactly 1,000 the way it worked out. So 26 people given ivermectin, 27 died out of 1,000. The placebo group, 82, died out of 903. That gives a 65% reduction in deaths via this other study, including more selected studies. And the p-value there is 0.002. That means there's two chances out of 1,000 that the result arose by chance. In other words, this is a massively significant result, and that's using the term significant in precise research terminology. Right, findings of randomized controlled trials are the same as observational studies. So this software can actually, it analyzed a cohort of randomized controlled trials and analyzed a cohort of good quality observational studies. And it found out that the results in both were highly comparable. So it looks like from that data, that indicates that the good quality observational studies are yielding data as accurate as the randomized controlled trials. Now, that's kind of sacrilege in research speak, but one of the great, I'll tell you more later when we've got time, but Dr. Laurie really opened my eyes to things about research that I didn't know. Do watch the whole video if you have time. It really is worth it. Now, ivermectin seems to be useful in all stages of the disease. Her meta-analysis showed there was an 88% reduction in infection rates, 88% efficacy in preventing infection, according to that data that she analysed. I mean, that is just staggering figure. And mild and moderate disease to reduce viral load, so disease worsening. So in mild and moderate disease, it reduced viral load, and it reduced viral load so the patient didn't get sicker. Right, she then kind of thought out loud, really, querying about long COVID. Will ivermectin work in long COVID? Now, I tend to be a bit cynical. I suspect it could do in some cases, but in many cases it probably won't because there might be already organ damage. But don't listen to me. My opinions are completely irrelevant. It's the data that matters. And she was saying there's data emerging from Argentina, and she thought Peru as well, indicating there might be some efficacy against long COVID. Placebo-controlled trial for 2 weeks would be a good option to start. So what she suggested was getting large numbers of people with long COVID, and we have, I think there's about 60 to 80,000 in the UK now, put them on a placebo-controlled trial for 2 weeks. If it's shown that the ivermectin group does substantially better than the placebo, then you could stop the trial, give everyone who had the placebo the ivermectin, and they could get the benefit as well, is what she was suggesting. Still with it, this fast pace study. Placebo controlled treatment trial not ethical. Now, what she's saying here is Dr. Laurie is so convinced about the efficacy of ivermectin that she thought it would actually be unethical to have a large randomized controlled trial where you would be giving people a sugar pill, even though the people conducting the trial, or she believes, that giving ivermectin is going to reduce their chances of dying. So who would volunteer for the placebo group if they were given full information on that? So this was the limitations that she pointed out about randomized controlled trials, which was so interesting and enlightening, that they're not always possible for ethical reasons, because by definition, there's a whole bunch of people in the control group that don't get the active intervention. 48% reduction in symptoms, that turned out at low certainty, but again, she was being conservative, so it looks like symptoms are reduced by 48%. Now, I asked about the safety of this drug, what's the risk-benefit analysis? No point having a drug that's efficacious but dangerous. Her answer to that was that billions of doses have been given over the last 40 years. It's one of the World Health Organization's essential medicines list because it treats parasitic infections. Probably a third of the world's population have had ivermectin at some time or another. So when I'm talking about billions, this is not an exaggeration. Literally thousands of millions of people have had ivermectin. From that, over the past 40 years where we have data, there's been 4,600 adverse reactions to ivermectin and 16 deaths, which actually, although it sounds bad, is actually remarkably small. Remdesivir, for example, over the past year, there's been 417 deaths. So this is, no drug is ever safe. All drugs carry a risk. Every single active pharmaceutical agent that you'll ever take carries some degree of risk. But the risk with ivermectin is small and massively smaller than remdesivir, which is being used routinely in many parts of the UK. Studies have shown it's safe even if you give 10 times the dose. It comes in tablets, 3, 6 or 12 milligram tablets. The dose is 0.2 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, or the higher dose would be 0.4 milligrams per kilogram. That would be 200 micrograms per kilogram or 400 micrograms per kilogram. So if you want to work out what it would be for a hypothetical 85 kilogram person, you could do so. Oral tablets, the cost is $168 per kilo. I mean, we're talking, so that's 0.2 milligrams. So you're talking about doses of like 20, 30 milligrams, perhaps, so over a course. And there's 1,000 milligrams in a gram, and there's 1,000 grams in a kilogram. It's $168 per kilogram. I mean, in other words, to make this, it's very, very cheap. What this means is to put this into the tablets for the drug manufacturer to compress, put this into tablets, put those tablets into packs, put them into boxes and distribute it, will cost way more than the raw cost of the drug. It is remarkably cheap. And it's generic, it's off-license. Pharmaceutical companies cannot make, well, they can sell it for what they want if people buy it. But the point is anyone can make, any pharmaceutical manufacturer approved in their particular country can... It's free to market this. There's no patent on it. There's no copyright on it, is what that means. So it's generic and freely available. World Health Organization, when they were selling it, 100 tablets, 100 12 milligram tablets. So for 100 12 milligram tablets, that's probably enough to treat, what, 30 or 40 people. That was $2.90. This is remarkably cheap. And of course, because it's remarkably cheap, and anyone, any reputable pharmaceutical manufacturer can make it, that means there's probably not a lot of profit in it. Not a lot, but they made it because it's off copyright.
All right, I'm going to stop out there. There's another 5 or 10 minutes to run. Right, I think he's made the point. That video was from March 2021. So it's about nearly 6 months old now, but it makes a point. I think a couple of the studies that were in that meta-analysis turned out to be questionable. So there was a study in Argentina and a study from Egypt that need to be taken out, but I think it still comes out as favorable for ivermectin. But don't quote me on that. I think there's still analysis going on, and there's a trial going on in Oxford at the moment for ivermectin as a treatment for SARS-CoV-2. I know this because I'm keeping an eye on it. Thanks for coming in, Woody. I appreciate you being here. It always helps to have an audience. I'm going to close the studio down, unless you want to call in and have a chat. You're welcome to do that for 10, 15 minutes if you want to. But if you don't want to do that, then I'll just close the room down. I'll find another video probably for later on tonight or early tomorrow morning if my current sleep and pattern continues. It'll be 3 o'clock in the morning or something ridiculous. But once again, thanks for coming in. Thanks for listening. And I'll catch you again a bit later on.